It's the first Thanksgiving game in Green Bay since 1923. Are the Packers truly back on track, or are they going to struggle to dispatch a team with a losing record? We'll try to find out as Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joins us for a preview. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a Thanksgiving Day game against the division rival Chicago Bears. To get ready, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
Expert interview.
We have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday. Nathan, how you doing?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Before we get to the Bears, if we take a quick look back at some of the players and how they performed in their last game against the Vikings, I thought one of the most impressive things about the Packers' victory is how well they stopped Adrian Peterson in the Vikings' run game. Who deserves credit for shutting Peterson down?
There are two players who really stood out to me, and there are two players who have faced Adrian Peterson a number of times, and that's B.J. Raji and Clay Matthews. Raji is a great example of how you can't just look at the stat sheet to figure out how good a player played in a game, since I don't think Raji technically had a tackle in this game, but he did do a good job on a number of plays. There was one where he was held. He was still able to make the tackle for no gain, but because there was a holding penalty, the Packers accepted that. So Raji didn't technically get the tackle, but we gave him credit for that play. Then there were a few other plays where he got the best of the Vikings guards, either standing them up on the line of scrimmage or either pushing the guard into the run lane. So those are plays that clearly will disrupt the run to help make someone else make the tackle. But Raji doesn't necessarily get credit for that. So Raji did a great job there. And then Clay Matthews, it was a little easier to see his impact on the game, since there were two plays where a defender tried to block him. Clay got around him, made a tackle for a loss, and then he had another for no gain. A couple other plays where he played well in the run game as well, but having those tackles for losses certainly helped.
Definitely those guys played well. And another guy who I thought played well is Mike Daniels. He's going through a stretch that I think is pretty remarkable. Where does Mike Daniels rank among other defensive linemen in the NFL? Because I think he's got to be right up there near the top.
First off, I definitely agree with you. He had a good game in this one as well. In the run game, made a few good tackles and disrupted a few other plays. Also contributed as a pass rusher with a sack and five hurries in this one, so the Packers' best pass rusher in the game. When you compare him to all interior defenders, whether it's 4-3 defensive tackles or 3-4 defensive ends or 3-4 nose tackles, we have him ranked 7th in the league, and that's a list that includes J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald, Lindahl Joseph, Dominican Sue, Geno Atkins, the Ravens' Brandon Williams, Ben Daniels, Fletcher Cox, Von Short, and Muhammad Wilkerson. So that's a lot of guys who you'll hear in Defensive Player of the Year talks, All-Pro Team talks, a lot of players with a very good resume. So Daniels is definitely in good company with how well he's been playing this year.
Good to hear him amongst those names. I like it a lot. Also on the defensive line, I thought the game that Dayton Jones had against the Vikings was probably among the best of his career. Where does that performance stack up? Because this is a guy we've been rather underwhelmed with in the first three games or 3 years of his career.
I'll focus specifically on his pass rushing, since that's where he excelled at in this one. And he had 2 sacks, 2 hits, 4 hurries, and a batted pass, all on 27 pass rushes. So you put that all together, and that's pretty good. a lot of those came a little late in the play, so that didn't grade quite as well as those raw stats would seem, but it was definitely his best game of the year. And in terms of raw numbers, the best game of his career. In terms of grades, his second best pass rushing game of his career. So definitely very good out of him. And he's someone who has quietly this year has been very consistently getting at least two pressures per game. So even though we aren't always talking about him as one of the best players for the Packers each week, he has been consistently doing a good job in pass rushing, which has added up to this year being among the top 15 3-4 defensive ends in terms of pass rushing.
That's good to hear. Just another guy who's, you know, starting to live up to expectations and playing well. If we stick on defense, but in the secondary now, Nathan, when Micah Hyde got injured, I said it was kind of almost a blessing in disguise because I thought it got the Packers' best personnel on the field in the secondary. Do the grades at Pro Football Focus seem to agree that Hyde is kind of behind the other DBs on the Packers roster, as I kind of think he is?
I think Hyde was probably in the right place in the pecking order before the injury happened, since it looked like the game plan in this one was to have him as the sixth defensive back in the dime defense. He only got some playing time early since Burnett was getting checked out for an injury. And then a little later on, the Vikings were using a one wide receiver set. And typically when the Packers are facing a one wide receiver set, they'll just have one cornerback on the field with three safeties and Hyde's the third safety. So I'm fine with Hyde being behind the three cornerbacks and two safeties, which seems like the right spot. The injury meant Quinton Rollins and Chris Banjo saw a little bit more playing time. And I wouldn't be surprised if either of those players with more playing time would be better than Hyde. But I just haven't seen enough out of Rollins or Banjo to know if they are better than Hyde at this point. So, and that's all thing. I think it has more to do with how good the Packers secondary is than Hyde. Hyde hasn't necessarily been playing poorly. It just everyone else has been playing very well this year.
I guess I can buy that. When another team has one wide receiver on the field, I can see keeping Micah Hyde in there. He is aggressive. He does tackle well. I'll give him that. I just like him in coverage, I suppose, a little bit less. But if we move on here, we're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning, starting to preview the upcoming Bears game. If we turn our attention to the offense, Nathan, James Jones is getting all the attention for his hoodie, but I think his play deserves even more attention. How did he grade out this pass game?
He basically had an incredible 2 minutes of football right at the end of the third quarter and to start the fourth quarter. There was twice on third downs, Aaron Rodgers was scrambling, was able to find Jones. First one was for a first down, the next one was for a touchdown. And right after that touchdown, he caught the two-point conversion. So he did very well over those 2 minutes of play. Throughout the other 58 minutes, he had another two catches that went for first down, another two catches that didn't go for first down. He did have one drop pass in this one, which brought his grade down a little bit. So overall, I think a few of his games earlier on this year were a little more impressive, but this was definitely by far his best performance over these last couple weeks.
Yeah, I think he played really, really well. Another guy who played well, Eddie Lacy. What allowed him to turn in his first 100-yard rushing outing and one of his best performances of the season?
I think Eddie Lacy deserves all the credit on this one, since the run blocking really wasn't all that great for the Packers here. He was able to make yards after contact, which is huge, something he hasn't been able to do a lot recently. Over these last four games, he never had more than 1.6 yards after contact per carry, which hasn't been great. But in this game, he had 3.4 yards after contact per carry. So a lot better there. Part of that was because he's been able to make a few guys miss tackles on him. Over these last 4 weeks, he just had two players miss tackles on him total, where in this game, he had four total. Not fumbling certainly helped, since he was doing that a little bit recently. But really, it was just play after play of him making a good cut in order to gain yards, which is something the Packers have really been missing.
Yeah, I'm glad he's starting to get back on track. We talked a lot about the good stuff. One of the few bad things, I know I was disappointed with Randall Cobb, not only this past game, I guess, but really the past several. Is there anything you see when you go through the statistics and kind of notice Cobb is struggling with? I just think I expect more out of him.
He definitely had a disappointing performance. He had fewer targets than he had been seeing these past few weeks. He only had 7, which part of that's just because the Packers ran fewer pass plays, but another part is, I'm guessing, how ineffective he's been recently. He had another 2 drop passes in this one, which gives him 5 over these past 3 games. And then really his catch rate is something that has been declining a lot recently. In 2013, he led the league in catch rate at 77.5%, which catch rate is just his catches divided by the number of targets he had. In 2014, he was still among the top 10 in the league at 72.8%. This year, he's at 58%, which is in the bottom half of the league. And then something that really stood out to me is looking game by game, only twice in his career before these last couple games, he had a catch rate below 50%. Once in 2011 when he was just thrown at once and he dropped that pass. And then another game in 2012 where he had 3 catches on 9 targets and 3 of his targets were dropped, which contributed to that. So he's always had a catch rate at 50% or better over the rest of his games of those 4 years. And then over these past 5 games, he's had 3 games with a catch rate below 50%. So he's had more bad games over these past 5 games than he did the rest of his career put together. So he just needs to catch the passes thrown his way. And I think once he's able to do that, he can get things back on track. But until then, I could see him still getting fewer targets.
Wow, that's really alarming to me to see him kind of drop off like that. I think he's got the talent to turn it around, but definitely a sign of struggles, if nothing else. That kind of shocks me. Nathan, as we start to look ahead to Thursday's game against the Chicago Bears, what areas of this team do the Packers have to be aware of? Because the Bears seem to at least be improved since the beginning of the season.
I'd agree the Bears have improved recently. They're now one of the several average football teams this year. On offense, by far their biggest weapon is Alshon Jeffrey. We currently have him graded as the 5th best wide receiver on a per-game basis, and that's behind guys like Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, and Larry Fitzgerald. He's just been playing excellently this year, so the Packers definitely need to be aware of where he is and make sure that they can stop him. Jay Cutler has been having a decent year throwing the ball, even though the pass blocking hasn't done as well in front of him. The run game this year for them has been average. On defense, they're a little bit better there. The Packers definitely need to be aware of where Pernell McPhee is and have a plan for stopping him, since he's been one of the best edge defenders this year, both in terms of stopping the run and pass rushing. The Bears, outside of that, on defense, nearly all of their guys are either average or a little above average, so they don't have too much of a weakness. If there's one area to exploit, it's the Bears' slot cornerback. Recently, Bryce Callahan took over as the starting slot cornerback. He's an undrafted rookie out of Rice. He's only had a few games under his belt so far, so he's inexperienced. So if there is any game for Cobb to get his confidence back, this one might be the game to do it.
Well, I hope that's the case. Nathan, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the game, and of course, enjoy your Thanksgiving. Hope it involves loads and loads of turkey. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday and preview the Lions game.
Sounds good. Thanks again for having me, and happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Same to you. Thanks much, Nathan. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here on the show on a Wednesday morning. We'll continue to preview the upcoming Bears game in our next segment.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, just before I get to my own 2 cents and my own prediction on the game, just a couple items that have, you know, been notable over the past several days in this short turnaround for the Packers, only 4 days between games, really the shortest of the year. And that's probably not a good sign when your injury report is the longest of the season. It reached 16 players for the first time on Tuesday. It had been at 15 players at times over the past several weeks, and then they added left tackle David Bakhtiari with a knee injury to the report yesterday, albeit he did take part in practice on a limited basis. But the larger picture here, all five Packers starting offensive linemen or preferred starting offensive linemen are on the injury report. So that's really not a good thing, of course. And you know, I take it with a grain of salt because these guys do grit it out pretty much every week. You know, Brian Bulaga has been listed on this report for weeks and weeks, pretty much ever since he had that knee injury and surgery early in the season. And all these guys have been there before, but they come back, they grit it out, they tough it out, and they play. I suppose the area with the most concern is Corey Linsley, who's been in the did not participate category each of the past 2 days. So Monday and Tuesday, albeit Monday was more of an estimation. They didn't really practice. I don't know if they had a walkthrough or anything like that. But just being the day after the game, they didn't go through a full on, you know, practice, you know, or anything like that. Now, the good news is your silver lining is that, you know, the guy who's expected to replace him, if he can't go, will be J.C. Treader, the same guy who, you know, filled in for the Packers this past Sunday and looked, you know, really good, especially for his first extended playing time of his career during a regular season football game, at least. Just hope he can pick up where he left off and hope he just kind of, the more experience he gets, the better he'll be. I've kind of proposed here for a while after seeing J.C. Treader last season, you know, have success at center during the preseason. And then during the regular season, he wasn't ever really needed there because Linsley was playing so well, but he did fill in at like tackling guard a few times and didn't look good. I think, you know, center may be J.C. Treader's position and perhaps his only position he can play at, which is good. If Linsley goes down, you got a capable fill-in. I'm not sure if J.C. Treader could handle it anywhere else, but at least the Packers set at the center position. They got plenty of depth there, so that's good. I wish the best for Corey Linsley. Hope he can return if he's 100%. I'm, you know, thinking just... If he's not, you know, as long as they got J.C. Treader, you know, let him heal, let him get better if he needs to be, because the Packers have a capable replacement. So, and one other person on the injury report would be Micah Hyde, who, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is experiencing numbness in his hip. Hyde has been listed on the injury report with a hip injury the past few weeks, but he's played through it, or attempted to play through it, I should say, I guess, against the Minnesota Vikings this past week. We already talked about his performance. Maybe it's part and due to that hip, because it was, you know, he came out of that game. He had to exit and did not return, as he, you know, is suffering through this bout of numbness, which I guess, you know, that can be pretty scary, I imagine, if you're a professional football player and you don't want to be feeling numbness anywhere. I mean, especially if you're talking in the spinal area, but anywhere for that matter would be a concern. He was able to practice on a limited basis on Tuesday, so that's good. It's a step in the right direction. Is he going to be good enough to play by Thursday? Don't know. I would hope the Packers would err on the side of caution. If there's any doubt, if he's fine, if he's able to play, great. But erring on the side of caution would be just fine by me. You know, more than anything in the concerns of Micah Hyde and his long-term well-being. So those are a few of the issues the Packers are dealing with the past few days. And also, just announced last night, and this kind of leads right into our game preview and talking about this upcoming Thursday night against the Chicago Bears, Brett Favre has been named a semifinalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, one of 25 players that the nominees have been culled down to. He's not in yet. Apparently, it will go from 25 down to 15 finalists in the month of January before they take the final vote just before the Super Bowl. But so Brett Favre among 25 players, he's only three that are first-year eligible, along with wide receiver Terrell Owens and offensive lineman Alan Faneca. It keeps getting closer, and I suppose it was only appropriate that it happened this week, the week he's being honored by the Packers organization. Now, if you know me, I'm not a Brett Favre fan, but in the interests of not going over the same territory again that I've been before, we'll continue on. But what I do think, regardless of my own opinions, as we talk about the greater, picture here of what's unfolding on Thursday night, I think the atmosphere is going to be amazing at Lambeau Field for many reasons. First of all, just because it is the first Thanksgiving Day game in Green Bay. You know, they've played at Detroit many times on Thanksgiving, but this is the first one in Green Bay since 1923. Let that soak in for a moment. 1923. I think the fans in Green Bay will be very excited to play on this, kind of national holiday that's become very much associated with the game of football as much as anything else, pretty much. And it's a nationally televised game in prime time at night. It's going to be a rocking atmosphere at Lambeau Field, a place in which the atmosphere has only gotten better over the years with the addition of the new seating a few years ago and just becoming a little bit more raucous crowd there, I think. And so I think it's going to be great, and I think that's going to play to the Packers' advantage. Now, add in the fact that the Packers are retiring Brett Favre's number, that Bart Starr is coming back, and that there's going to be a moment at some point in time. If you've been following this stuff in the media, Brett Favre, Bart Starr, and Aaron Rodgers, the three quarterbacks that have led the Packers to a Super Bowl, are going to be in Green Bay at the same time. And I think people are waiting for a photo op to kind of commemorate this because I don't think it's ever happened before. Or if it has, it hasn't happened in a long time at least. And so people are waiting for this. And I don't know because, Aaron Rodgers has a game to play. They're going to honor Brett Favre at halftime. So it may not actually happen at halftime or anything like that. But I think you can rest assured at some point, it may not be in front of the Pack Stadium. It may not be in front of live television cameras. But at some point on Thursday, before the game, after the game, maybe pregame, these three guys will get together for a photo op. The Packers kind of keeping that under wraps when it'll be. But you can very much be assured that that's going to happen at some point on Thursday. I think all these things are going to add up to a terrific atmosphere, and I think that is going to be the difference. Now, if you want to take this all with a grain of salt, I predicted two games ago when the Packers played the Detroit Lions that I thought it was going to be the case where the Packers were going to come off two losses against the Broncos and the Panthers, and things weren't looking good. But I thought, they're playing one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're going to kill them. They're going to crush them. And it didn't happen. I felt bad about that prediction because, it wasn't even as if the Packers were competitive that game. They did not look good. I get, it was close at the end. But, I expected a blowout from the Packers and didn't get it. I still think it's coming from them. I still think it's coming. And I think they got, you know, better in the game against the Minnesota Vikings. It wasn't a great offensive effort from the Packers. And I'm a little hesitant that to say it's going to be a blowout, but, you know, I'm predicting a 24-14 Packers victory. So I don't know if you consider that a blowout or not, a 10-point margin of victory. It's comfortable, I guess, you know, two scores worth. So that's how I see it. But if I talk just briefly about the keys to the game, I think it certainly helps the Bears that they're apparently going to get some of their star football players back. Running back Matt Forte and wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey. Those guys missed the previous game, few games for some of them, with injuries. And now they're apparently coming back. I do wonder if they're at 100% or will, you know, how much of an impact these guys will be able to make. I mean, if they weren't able to play on Sunday, it's only 4 days later. I mean, how much better have they gotten in that time? But they're coming back. So I think that'll help the Bears, but maybe not as much as, you know, they hope. I think, you know, it certainly helps a guy like Jay Cutler, who's been looking better, a lot better this season, and maybe you can contribute to that to the addition of Adam Gase in Chicago as their offensive coordinator. The Packers going to have to be wary of that. But if they can play like they did against the Minnesota Vikings and shut down the run game, shut down Forte just like they did Adrian Peterson, and put the Bears in third and long, you know, they're going to have a lot of success. Yeah, the Bears might get lucky on third and long, just like the Packers. You might get lucky once in a while, but if you're consistently having to convert third and 10, you know, you're going to convert fewer than usual, than normal. It's a lot easier to convert third and 3. So that's what the Packers got to do, stuff the run game and do that. I think, you know, there's maybe an area in the Bears defense in the secondary that they've played pretty well against the pass this year. The Bears have. And I do think there's talent in the secondary, maybe not always as much as it should be with a guy like Kyle Fuller, who I thought was really talented coming out of college and has done good things for the Bears, but maybe not on a consistent basis. So anyway, I think he's a threat. You know, more injuries here for the Bears, and they're definitely dealing with them as well. Safety Antrell Roll, he's one of their better players. His status is up in the air for Thursday's game, and he may or may not be able to play, and we'll find out more as the Bears release their own injury report today. But I think if he's out there, he's pretty good. I think they're, you know, hoping for a better performance. Nathan Yonke mentioned out of Bryce Callahan, who's their new slot cornerback. Maybe he's better than what they had at least. So I think there's, you know, some things to be encouraged about from the Bears in the secondary. And you know, the Packers going to have to combat that and do it really without a top-tier passing game that they haven't displayed this year. Maybe this, as Nathan Yonke said, maybe this is the time a guy like Randall Cobb breaks out. Because I'll tell you what, if Randall Cobb breaks out, the whole offense is going to break out, or at least the passing game is going to. It'll be one of those cases where the rising tide lifts all ships, I think, as we talked about the other show with Peter Bukowski of Sports Illustrated had said that. I think it applies here. If Randall Cobb plays well, I think, you know, the rest of the team will follow. Because, I mean, he is such a playmaking, such a, you know, the ability to lift other players. I think I saw on our live blog, John commenting, saying that they should get involved Cobb early in the game, give him a reverse or something like that. I think that's a great idea. Not just the Packers, but it seems like all teams in the NFL are so conservative, like, to begin a game. Like, so few people would run a reverse the first drive of a game. I mean, it seems like they have to lull teams to sleep or something and do it later. I don't necessarily buy that. Do something like that early. Get the ball in Cobb's hands early. Help him get a little bit of confidence. Hey, if it doesn't go for 10 yards, so be it. But hey, if it works for, you know, even 4 or 5 yards, that's a successful play. It's better than, you know, sitting there at 2nd and 10 or anything like that. So I think that's a great idea. Get Cobb involved early. Get him involved somehow, whether the run or the pass. And you know, just kind of build off that. Build his confidence, and things will come, I think. So I don't know if it's going to be a bust-out game here for the Packers, but if they can just put forth the same performance, especially on the defensive side of the football that they did against the Vikings, they'll be in good shape. And I think the environment and the fan atmosphere will carry this team. They're going to get them highly enthused and playing with passion and excitement and toughness and aggressiveness. That can go a long way when you got 80,000 people, you know, cheering their heads off for a rare opportunity on Thanksgiving in Green Bay. So I think that'll be big, and think the Packers will come way victorious. So that's the way I see the game playing out. And just briefly, our last segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, I think what you're looking forward to today is the final injury report of the week being released for the last time before Thursday's game. And the names we're looking for today, again, Corey Linsley, who I mentioned earlier, hasn't, you know, he's been in the did not participate category the past two games. And on top of him, the two wide receivers, the only three players that didn't practice on Wednesday, Linsley, along with Ty Montgomery and Jared Abradaris. And it's not even worth talking about, because maybe these guys, it's just a foregone conclusion they're not going to play. It's unfortunate, because I think Ty Montgomery is heading in the wrong direction. He was practicing last week and now he's not. I don't know if he aggravated it or whatever. Unfortunate, and it's having a impact in the return game, you know, with their personnel back there. The Packers, you know, they've had to go through a lot of people at both kick returner and punt returner this year, actually having to use Randall Cobb on punt returns, which, you know, they rather wouldn't have to do. But they've, you know, suffered so many injuries. Montgomery's out. Hyde is injured. So where did they turn to on punts? But Randall Cobb, I guess you got to go there. I don't blame the Packers. I just hope Cobb is smart, because I think, you know, if there's any question, any doubt in your mind that you could take a big hit, well, just take the fair catch. Just make a secure catch, and that's fine. I'll never accuse Randall Cobb of you know, making a fair catch. You know, that if he wants to do that, I'll never, you know, blame him for doing so. And then you're seeing Jeff Janis on kick returns, and you saw how dangerous he can be with the longest return of the year, 70 yards this past week. I hope the Packers just continue right on using him. See, you know, that's a good way to get the ball in his hands, and I think he can help the Packers out in that area. Even when Ty Montgomery comes back, keep him back there, perhaps. Ty Montgomery's pretty good, too. I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But for the time being, get Jeff Janis out there and put the ball in his hands on kick returns, if nothing else. And I hope he gets involved in offense, too. But, you know, get him out there and give him a shot. Let's see if he can take it to the house. So there you go. Enjoy your holiday, folks. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. On behalf of everybody here at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV, wish you a happy holiday. Enjoy it with your families, and enjoy the game. And we'll recap it on Monday. There will be no episode of Railbird Central on Friday. I'm sorry. Seeing as I'm working on Thanksgiving, I get the next day off, so I'm going to take advantage of that. So we'll see you, folks. See you Monday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted on demand later in the day. My one small thing I ask of you, if you would, please give us a rating on iTunes. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. The one small thing we ask in return is if you could give us a rating and a brief review, we'd appreciate it. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, folks. We'll see you. I leave you today with a song called Cannon in the Heavens by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack, go.
You've had it every time that I'm rapping, baby. Going to the mattress is a cannibal about it. Devouring you average motherfuckers like a panther does a rabbit, does a cabbage. I'm a beast, a mammoth, I'm a freak, a savage, I'm an abnormality. Ain't no matter doubt it, I'm a fiendish rap stallion. Beating your battalion with ease like a mallet. Leave you flat out, then I'm...